you either would see,
I'm going to take a mental health day or call out sick. Or you might see, unfortunately, sad as it is suicide, alcoholism, drug addiction, divorce rate, broken families, broken relationships, isolation. It's a tough job.
This is Diary of a Nation. I'm your host, Christina Zlotnick. My podcast explores the human experience. Correctional officers are exposed to violence, injury, and death by virtue of their roles inside the prison system. They confront some of the same challenges that police officers, firefighters, and combat military personnel face. In her 31-year career as a correctional officer, Kelly was one of those frontline workers. She started at age 19 and has since retired. In the interest of privacy, I'm only using her first name. Kelly, could you tell me about your work?
I started at a medium facility, which is behind a wall. And anyone who's doing a medium facility in the state, my state, is anything from 2.5 years sentence to life imprisonment. You know, you have to make sure that everything is secure. There's times where there's movement. You know, they have breakfast, they have lunch, they have dinner. There's different programs, different movement, depending on the level of security. There's some that they would still get recreation, but it'd be more on a limited basis because it could be because they were a behavioral issue or the stipulations of the rules of that institution, or they'd be out in the yard having either walking or maybe playing baseball, like softball. They had music programs. They even had education where the individual could go and get an education. If they didn't have a high school diploma, they could get their GED. There has even been people that went to college and got their degrees. You know, it has been proven that over years that inmates that did get an education, the recidivism rate was lower because they were getting out there and getting a career.
How good a job do you believe the prison system does with respect to rehabilitation?
There is programs, like they have a barber program where they can go out and they get their licensing and they can go out and, you know, make a living after they get released. When people start seeing the accomplishments that they can do in their life, those little steps are big steps. I have been away for a while. I know some of the programs, like anything, funding gets cut, but they have different religious, you know, they have, you know, Catholic services. They have different worship levels. They have a right to have that. They have a lot of things that we can do on the outside that's available inside. You don't want to stereotype. You're dealing with a bunch of people that are from all different socioeconomic classes. A criminal is a criminal. It doesn't matter if you came from not so good family or you can come from an elite family that were well to do. Crime is crime. They do the best they can with the resources they have, you know, places where you can go and get counseling. They have 12-step programs. They have stuff that if they have the issues, it's available. But it's up to them to use those services available to them. You have to want it. You know, the way I look at it, if I was inside and I made some bad choices, and I call them mistakes because, as let's say, broken crayons, call it the same, you can turn your life around, but it's your choice that if you want to take those opportunities, they're there, they're available, but you have to use them. I mean, you have to keep your staff safe. You have to keep the population safe. We have a responsibility to keep them safe, to give them what is necessary because that is their right. We're not there to enforce the punishment. It's already been sentenced and, you know, by a judicial system. It's not about us to do the extra punishment. Unless somebody's been there and walked the walk, they have no idea what an officer goes through on a daily basis, not only just in the stresses of the job. It can be dangerous. It also can be seeing staff, you know, short staff and trying to get the accomplishment, what you need to get done. And, you know, unfortunately, you have management that expect you to do anything and have really unrealistic expectations. But yet, if you don't perform and you don't do what we do, there's going to be consequences. Now, you're going into a stressful job, a dangerous job at times, and your many years that you had a really good, you know, good career, one hour, it can change in a New York minute. It's special people have to do that job. It's not for anybody. But yes, I chose it, but I like the challenges, you know. You don't really know what you're doing until you get in there, and you know, you're dealing with different people from walks of life. You're trying to work with, you know, your coworkers, and you're trying to get a job done that sometimes can be very difficult, and go home and someday it's a really hard day, and then, you know, you have your family and your life challenges, and you have to find that balance, and sometimes it can be very, very stressful. So stressful that sometimes, I mean, when you're going in different levels of security and there can be a lot of violence and you have to protect yourself and you're going home and you're, you know, you have to leave that job at your, where you worked and go home and say, and act like it's okay. But I don't know any human being day in and day out can do that sometimes and just say it's not going to affect them because it's going to affect them.
Did you bring your job home?
I try not to. I had this rule. I had one child. Unless it was a life emergency, you know, give me a few minutes. Let me get my, you know, my things together and let me see how your day was, and just shut off. And I am a faithful woman, so I used to have I used to say a prayer before I went in, and I used to say a prayer when I left. I was very fortunate that there were some times that it could have been, when I think about the incidents that happened, that I turned out okay and I was safe and I had good staff around me and everything turned out right, because it could have not gone that way.
What did happen?
I think when I first went in, I just thought it was going to be a job, and I realized that this is going to be bigger than myself, but I said, I can do it. Because I had my father who, you know, God bless him, he was a hard worker, and we had this philosophies in our family that there's no can'ts, there's only can's. So, okay, I got this job, but also too, at the level when I started at 19 years old, I'm still trying to figure out life. I'm being with people that had some different experiences and being from a small town, and it was an eye-opener. I think one blessing in disguise that I did have a voice, and I had to learn sometimes when to speak it and when not to speak it, and a lot of watching and a lot of learning. And I did have some good mentors that I watched that guided me, and I was okay to say I made a mistake when I made a mistake.
But let's face it, you're a woman in a male-dominated profession.
Yes. I had some wonderful people. And there's always, I think, and it doesn't matter if you're in corrections or you're in any job, you're going to have some people that are going to challenge you. Not everybody likes you. It's, you know, that's in life. They're going through whatever they're going through, or sometimes we're going to knock you down a notch because I'm going to make myself feel good. I had learned that it didn't matter how good I did it. It was never going to be good enough, because when women started in my career at the age when I started, it was still, women were only allowed to work at a certain areas. It got more open-minded that we needed to be implemented in different ways. I did have some people tell me, you don't belong here, that you need to go home, you need to have babies, more or less. I mean, and I go, well, that's maybe your opinion, but staying here, get over it, and I'm not leaving. So that's just the way it is.
Were you ever in unsafe situations?
You're always in an unsafe situation when you go in prison. You know, you have to be aware. If you're not aware now, especially with the way this world is, if you're in, you know, you don't want to be paranoid, but you have to be really aware of your environment. If you don't see things and think, this can't happen to me, I mean, it can. So one thing, if you get too comfortable in your job, you're setting yourself up to not only get yourself hurt, but your other staff. You had to be aware of the environment. You had to be aware of what was going on in a housing unit, what was going on with changes of policy. If you're having all different people, you don't know what's going on, if they're getting a divorce from being incarcerated or their family structure, they're not getting visits, and you don't know if they're, you know, they're getting neglected from their families or not having the support systems. There's some people who are incarcerated, they prefer not having visits because it makes them do their time without that outside influence, because it's difficult.
How well do you think the prison system helps inmates who have physical problems and mental health challenges?
I'll give a good example. As you know, everybody knew when it was, you know, HIV, AIDS came, and at the time when the epidemic came out, and you know, there was not a lot of education, and you know, the drug AZT, you know, if anybody knew how much the cost of that drug was, what the cost was, I mean, it was available, but also, too, there was also paranoia. You know, they said treat everybody as if anybody has any disease, you just use, you know, precautions. But I used to even see that there would be the incarcerated people complaining about what kind of medication they got, knowing that when I went to a doctor's appointment with my insurance, I couldn't even get that medication because my insurance wouldn't allow it, but it was available for them. And not that I was judging about their care, but I couldn't even have access to even what they were getting. That was frustrating. You know, when we're sick, we go to an appointment, we go and wait. They wanted quick service. Sometimes that doesn't happen in real life. You have to wait just like everybody else. You know, you have different people who may have illnesses. You want to have a clean prison. Some of them didn't even know what a clean room was, because they didn't have that growing up. They didn't have that structure. I used to say to the incarcerated, just because you're here, nobody can take your self-respect away unless you take it away. You have the choice of how you want to be treated. Doesn't mean you have to act inappropriately. You can take pride in, even in your cell, have it neat, have it orderly, have it clean.
What about their mental health?
Not just only mental health for inmates. I think there's not enough mental health, not just for incarcerated, but people in whole society. Because what happens when it comes out in society, eventually, if it's not dealt with, it's a mushroom effect. And not only do they suffer, we suffer as well, because it ricochets back and forth. Addiction is real. That's probably one of the main reasons. If you see anybody who's incarcerated, if you ask them, were you under the influence of any alcohol or drugs when you committed your crime? And they will probably say yes.
How did it affect the people around you?
You either would see, I'm going to take a mental health day or call out sick. Or you might see, unfortunately, sad as it is suicide, alcoholism, drug addiction, divorce rate, broken families, broken relationships, isolation. It's a tough job.
You also did extraditions. Explain how all that worked.
We would travel either through a car or either through, through air travel and bring them back. And most cases when I did that job, and when I would speak to them, I go, how do you feel now? He goes, one individual, they said, I'm relieved. I don't have to look back around all the time, the back, and turn around and worry if I'm being watched. Because you were constantly worrying if you're going to be found out. He goes, it's an uneasy feeling. And some people, it's amazing that some people manage to get away with it for a long time. But eventually, like anything, you can't hide. They're going to find you. Or somebody is going to spill the beans on you, and eventually they find out you. Because there are still some people who are missing, but they can walk away. And some of them are high-profile crimes, and, you know, they're out looking for them, but they can change. I mean, a well-known one, I don't have to is Whitey Bulger. I mean, sometimes I wonder if both sides knew where they were. They just didn't want him to be found. And we know the rest of the story about that.
Did you work in a prison system where other notable inmates were housed?
Absolutely.
Can you name some of those names?
I prefer not to. Where I worked, if you know where the crimes are being, you knew they were going to be incarcerated at that state facility.
What's that like when those kinds of inmates are in a prison system?
It can be good and bad for us, or it could also be bad for them because the profile, you know, you have to keep them safe. We have to keep ourselves safe. You know, you don't know if another, especially we have gangs, you don't know if somebody's going to harm somebody else because they want to make notoriety to make a name for themselves. What is a VIP criminal? They're all incarcerated. Not one is better than the other. You're incarcerated. You're a criminal. You're not better than anybody else. Oh, you did bank robberies better than somebody. It all comes down to you got caught.
What kind of training did you need to get hired?
Some states, most times, are civil service. You take a civil service exam. They do background checks. Some facilities now they look at your credit score, and then they do a CORE background to make sure that you haven't any criminal record. Then you go to a training academy. They teach you the fundamentals.
How long was that, roughly?
Fortunately for me, I didn't have the normal training as most people did. I was kind of like 2 weeks, and then I started out at a place where it was a co-ed prison, and I was thrown into the fire.
Wow, on-the-job training.
It was on-the-job training as the best, and being, like I said, 19 years old, and it was like, fake it till you make it.
How much training do they get today on average, do you think?
I'm not when they're sure. New. I could be wrong because I've been so out. You know, it's like I've been gone for 12 years. I'm trying to think it's between 8 to 12 weeks. I could be wrong. You have to go through the physical. You have to go through the written. They want you to, you know, be prepared how to do report writing, what to look for, you know, behaviors of different things, you know, mental health, the physical structure of a prison, dealing with different people, you know, being professional. There's a lot of legalities involved. So they train you. And then, of course, you do probably some cross training and, you know, you do some on-the-job training.
Within 3 years of their release, 2 out of 3 former prisoners in the U.S. are rearrested. More than half are incarcerated again. And we call our prisons correctional facilities, but those numbers don't sound good.
No, they don't. But the reality of it, that is sometimes how some person is going to cope for the rest of their life. That's all they know. Like anything, if you want to change or grow, doesn't matter if you're incarcerated, you have to go out and do the work. It's not always going to be easy. You might not have the money coming in. Doesn't mean you go out and do a crime so to support you have it. That's not how life really works. But when you don't work on yourself inside, if you know you haven't, even though inside, yes, can you get controlled substances? Yes, there can be contraband brought in. Can you make, as they say, homebrew or alcohol or fermented juices? Yes, you can do that if you have a problem. When an addict wants to get what they want, they're going to get it. They're going to get it how they want to get it. If you've had that kind of behavior on the outside and that's all you know, when you get out, you either have to get into a program, have a life coach, or have somebody, because let's face it, if you have a parole officer, they're going to keep you accountable. It's choices. It all comes down to a human being having choices. But sometimes some people feel defeated that they don't even know what to do, and that's all they know. And people give up. This ain't getting better. This is what my life's going to be. And they accept it, which is sad. But then you also see stories where you know that they've done very well for themselves and they're just going out and being a regular citizen and trying to make do with their life as best as they can like anybody else.
I don't believe that you can harm another person without causing yourself harm in some way. And I believe that people who commit crimes are people who are suffering themselves.
Mm-hmm. There are the strong ones, I don't know if you say the light comes on and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. This life is not for me. That I'm going to change and switch. What does a child need when they're being brought up? They need love. They need nurturing. If a human being doesn't get that, some people are strong-willed and they can figure it and get it. It starts breaking down. And sometimes some people don't even know they had that until they get older or they'll get into the addiction. They don't know till later in life, and they don't realize that whatever the trauma may be, or if they blocked out, it could have been from sexual abuse. It could have been from emotional, verbal. It couldn't even been from physical, because sometimes, not that is right, a parent would discipline a child with physical force.
What role does our larger world have?
A lot of people don't know this. But when somebody, the state that I worked in, when an incarcerated person is released from their sentence and going into society, they automatically have stipulations that are already set for them. Health insurance. There's people, I've seen volunteers, lots of volunteers have gone inside, done fellowship through the prison system, go in there to be. They reach out afterwards and say, we're here for you. So, they have those roots planted so they can go, and there's ministries and faith where they can go. People of faith are very much, they're there for people. They don't look at it that you're incarcerated. They're there to help you because that's what the mission of ministry is, to help one another. And there are some families that even for the incarcerated that go out, they do have strong family and still are there for them. But then, let's say some of them that have burned bridges with their families because they've given up for them because they try to be there for them. And, you only can do so much for somebody. If they don't want to do it for themselves, you give up on them. Because eventually, they have to do the work. It all comes down to you have to do the work to change, to evolve. And it's hard, but it's growth.
You've seen people who have suffered more than most.
Yes, I have. But I also realize that even in my own self, and I still have to take accountability of my own actions, we make mistakes. Yes, we make mistakes. How do we change? Yes, you had a sentence served to you. You're doing your sentence, and then you're going to hopefully go out in society and prove to yourself and to the public that you're going to you're going to be a person who is going to be a good person in society. It all comes down to choices. We have our choice. It's free will. You know what's good and bad. It's choices. Be kind. Live by the golden rule. Treat others how you want to be treated. Doesn't mean commit violent crimes, steal, lie, cheat, murder, betray people. There's consequences for that. You might think you're going to escape. It eventually catches up to you.
Has a prisoner ever bribed you or put you in a compromising position?
It's one thing I have learned over my career that you have to be very careful. There's a little saying, it's called the anatomy of a setup. You have a boundary line where you're an officer and you don't step over that line. It's called professionalism. Have you ever seen a child when you're a baby, when I'll be right back, they'll put something that the child wants and see what they're going to do?
Now, yes.
I don't want you to have that, but I'm going to, I'll be right back.
The famous marshmallow test.
Yes, yes. So it doesn't matter if a child or adult, the temptation's there.
Could you share some stories of inmates who've left an impression on you?
I knew this individual was going to be doing a lot of time in the future. And over the years, even though, I went into different parts of the institution in different places, I ended up going back and this person was still there, say. And what was amazing to see that considering at such a young age, he did his sentence, he did a lot of time, he still had some humor. He still, you could see he wasn't a bitter person. I don't know what he's doing, but in my heart, I felt that he was going to do right. And even in his, when he was doing what he was doing inside to survive or even doing a job, you always could see he took pride in it. But just like anything, you would go up to somebody and say, you're doing really a great job. It's not saying you're sugarcoating or you're paying favorites. Sometimes people just say, you know, you're really doing great work. Keep it up. Sometimes a compliment can go a long way, a smile. Even though I had to learn, you have to go in hard and then you ease up. You don't go ease up because they'll walk all over you. I had one officer one day, he was talking to me and he goes, I did so many disciplinary reports. I've had all these numbers, you know. And I go, how many years have you been in? And he looked at me and he was really, really proud that, you know, I keep order in my housing unit. And I go, you know what that tells me? I says, you can't run a housing unit. And he looked offended and I go, what is that report going to do? Is that going to serve the person? Because you're going to have to deal with them again. Some things you have to, you know, address. There's other ways of handling it. I said, all those number of reports don't always work. You have to know how to learn how to deal with people. A report isn't going to help the problem because you're still going to have the problem.
What other inmates left an impression on you? Who do you still think about?
I saw families that through thick and thin stuck through them through a long period of time and believed in them.
You mean come and visit all the
time? Come and visit and be supportive. But I did see this one individual. It was very sad. In his own way, this person was, he was really a funny individual. Sometimes people are good people. They just, the problems are bigger than themselves and it takes them down. And that's the reality of it. And unfortunately, this person, because of things that happened, got back out in society and it was because of things he did. It didn't work out well for him. We have where we have to do security rounds. It's very big and, you know, you have to do your rounds, make sure that, you know, one, the people that we're watching are there in the facility, but also, too, that they're safe. Unfortunately, there was a death. I don't want to get into the details of the death, but the fact is I was very aware that this person came every week to see this individual. You know, I had one mother come and say, you know, just because my son is here doesn't mean he's not my child. I still love them for who they are. I basically had to tell, because when there's a death of somebody who's incarcerated, there's, you know, you have to make sure there's no foul play. They have to make sure that everything's done and, you know, for legal purposes that everything was done correctly. And I knew what day it was, and it, you know, I had come in early that day, and basically, I said, you better call this person, because I said, this person comes here.
Call the mother.
Yes, and I said, you are going to have a bigger hand of problems if you do not. And the saddest thing about it was, Christina, it was the day before Mother's Day. And I know it's just a job, but I'm thinking, okay, tomorrow I'm going home to my daughter and I'm going to celebrate my Mother's Day. And I'm thinking, didn't matter that this person was incarcerated. The purpose of it was this person she was coming to visit was not an inmate. This was her son. This was a son who she loved, she never gave up on. And I'm thinking, now this poor woman has to remember every day. But on Mother's Day, that the day before her memory, because of her love, profound love for her son, she has to remember her Mother's Day, her son is gone. That was probably a profound moment in my life that, you know, you need to just keep doing your job and just do it with integrity and character and no judgment, because we don't know what people's lives or what they walk through. Just do it with dignity and humility. I still think about that story every Mother's Day and how grateful I am to have such a beautiful daughter and how blessed I am. But knowing that some families suffer through addiction, the losses of their loved ones, and it's such a sorrow because it's not the person that wants to be the drug addict or who they are. It's something that's just so bigger than themselves, and their families believe in them and want to love them and just want them to do well. And it's a selfish, self-centered disease. And this woman, just you could tell she would come in and she was just life herself, even though as if you knew where I was, it was a very dark, it could be a very dark place. She was a light. She was vigilant of being there for her child and supporting him through how long his incarceration was.
You told me before we started the interview tonight that you wanted to speak about your family with respect to addiction. What would you like to share?
How can I say it? I lost my sister 3 years ago to alcoholism. I lost my mother at 36 years old of alcoholism.
I'm really sorry.
Yes, it's, you know what? But both of them were amazing, beautiful people. And, you know, you think like, it's not a bad thing. People who have addiction are not bad people. They're just in their own little prison.
They're people in pain.
They're people who are in pain with brokenness. And
I believe they're doing the best they know how to cope with the pain. It's not maybe my best or your best.
Some days you can't get out of bed. Some days people who don't even have addiction just have a bad day and dust themselves off. But when people have those issues, they don't know how to get out of it, or hopefully they find somebody that takes them by the hand and be the encourager and saying, there's a better way. Hopefully they find what the peace is. I think the biggest thing in anybody is peace. When I'm doing this podcast and I'm speaking this out of love, because this is not to disrespect the memory of my sister. I love my sister so much. She was a wonderful person, but this was bigger than herself. And a week before she passed away, which I am so grateful that before she left this world, she made peace with God. She made peace with herself. And I had to realize the acceptance of it as much. I had to accept the fact this was bigger than herself and she just couldn't do it. I'm sure, as you heard, you know, Matthew Perry just passed away. And, you know, he was just another person in Hollywood. But one thing was wonderful about him, even in his difficulties, he had no shame. He talked about it openly. There should be no shame. No shame. No shame. No shame. I say that all the time. No shame. We're only sick as our secrets. We don't need to take the world on by ourselves. The thing is, there are help. There is, you know, AA. It's a wonderful program, but it's not for everybody. You have to do what works for you. Alcohol does so many things, not just only to the person's life, but the relationships with the family, the dynamics. It's a terrible, terrible disease. Give them love. You know, never give up on them. Give them encouragement. Be there for them without judgment. And I guess it's too, sometimes it's frustrating because, you know, when they're trying to just get up and show up the best way they can. Don't be an enabler. It's one of the hardest things to see somebody you love and you know they're failing at their life because it's something that's bigger than themselves, but you still love them. Like I said, it's always easy to love somebody when it's easy. It's hard to love when it's hard. It's so hard because, you know, you walk around and I see my beautiful family and, you know, my sister was, you know, she had a lot of good things going for her, but then seeing her suffering, it broke my heart to see her suffer and I wanted to take it away from her. But yeah, I had to be strong to be there for her, so I wanted her to figure it out on her own. And sometimes when you do that, you can be the bad guy, but also you wanted to love her with acceptance and you didn't want to make her feel any less of herself. It's a horrible, horrible disease. But like I said, the last week before I got that moment and I realized whatever God's will is going to be God's will. And I had to accept that. And when I had to say goodbye to my sister, it was one of the saddest days of my life, because I saw it happening not only once, but with the twice, because, you know, losing my mother at such a young age. Do I just go and live my life and act like nothing happened? The only way I'm going to make a difference, for I want change, is I have to talk about it openly. People need to know there's no shame, that they should be able to go to somebody. I don't know if you know, when law enforcement, public safety, who has one of the highest drug, alcohol, and divorce rates, plus the suicides are increasing because of the stress factors of the job. It's a very difficult job, and we're more critiqued every day about what we don't do right instead of what we do right. They do the best they can. They protect, and people should be saying thank you for what they do, that because they make a difference in this world. And I had many women and men who I worked in the field that had my back, and I am so very thankful that I had them.
Thank you, Kelly. If you're struggling, you can contact the helpline for the National Alliance on Mental Illness at 800-950-6264 or text HELPLINE at 62640. Follow Diary of a Nation on Instagram, Facebook, and Substack.